Today is March 9th, 2011. I'm at the home of Kathleen Francisco in Opportunity, just outside of Anaconda, Montana. And present with me today, my name is Kay Eccleston. Patrick Cook from the Gathering Project is videotaping the interview. Kathleen Koch is here with me, as is her sister Maureen from Great Falls.
Fairfield.
Outside of Great Falls.
Yes.
Okay. So, Koch, if you would just like to identify yourself and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am Kathleen Koch Gallagher Francisco. My mother's maiden name was McGuire. And I was born and raised in Anaconda, lived in Anaconda all my life until I was married, and then we moved to Opportunity. We had four children. I was teaching, I taught for a while, and then we owned a bar, the Club Modern, and we ran that business for over 20 years until we retired from it. And I'm very active in the Lady Hibernians, and I love Irish dancing. Not that I know how to do it very well, but I like to do Irish dancing.
Okay. Let's see. So you've covered all the biographical information. Very good. Koch, what do you know about anything about when your Irish ancestors emigrated from Ireland to the United States?
Well, on the Gallagher side, and I guess I pronounced Gallagher wrong. There's no G-H. It's Gallagher. And this is what I was informed when we went to Ireland this year. When anybody was talking to us, there was no G-H sound at all in it. But my grandfather came from Achill Island, which is on the west coast of Ireland. And from the stories that we have been told, at the age of 15, he was caught fishing in a pond that was on the Gallagher land. And he was warned not to do it again, and he did it again. And the magistrate, who was also a member of his community and another Irishman, he and him had a great fight. And my grandfather thought he killed him because he hit him in the head with the rock in the fight. And at that time he went home, stole money from his family, and went to Scotland and learned electrician trade. And somewhere around, I would say, 1890, I think, right around in there, he came to the United States. And he, from what I can get, he was married in Chicago to a Mary Moggy was her name. And there was three children, but the first two children died, and the third, Edward, lived, but the wife died at that birth. And then he remarried again a woman by the name of Margaret McInerney. And they came to Montana. Well, first of all, my grandfather was a great electrician. And he was very active in the St. Paul area. And I believe there was a World's Fair at that time, and it was an electrical fair. And according to him, it wouldn't have been done without his gracious hand of doing all the electrical work there. He did a lot of the electrical work at that fair. Then he came to the United States, to Helena, because of Tom Cruise in Helena, who was a first cousin to our grandmother, Margaret McInerney. And Tom Cruise, of course, had the big gold mine in Helena, and he's the one that gave the money to build the cathedral in Helena. And Pa had to go into the mines. That's what we called our grandfather, Pa. And he hated it. He hated being down there. So Daly, of course, was over here, and he was building the new smelter and the need of electricians and stuff. So because of a man by the name of Burke, he had a sister in Ireland that was remarried to a Burke, so I think this must have been some kind of a relative there, relationship there, and he came on into Anaconda then because of that, and he went to work then as electrician for Daly. And their first child was born here in 1902, and her name was Margaret, and she was named after Tom Cruise's wife, her who was Margaret, and also had a child by the name of Margaret. And she, the story was that she took that child by train to Helena to introduce it to Tom Cruise, who was, I guess, a very close cousin to her. I don't know all of that. But he did a lot of work. And in 1954, Pa was the oldest card-carrying electrician in the United States.
Oh, that's And quite the accomplishment.
Yes, and there was a great big national man that came in and gave him a big award. It was all up at the Montana Hotel. And there was a Michael McDermott that was head of the IBEW, I think is what the Electricians Union was at that
time.
And Paul was hurt, and I think he was hurt on the hill, and I don't know. And he ended up his days as the caretaker out in the park. And he used to take, you know, that little shack and stuff there, and he used to take care of the park until he could retire and stuff like that. And they lived on East 5th Street. And their children were all born there. And he died, I would say, in maybe 55, around in that time.
Okay.
He died in 50. We got this award right before he passed away, anyway,
okay.
Maybe a year or two after that. And we still don't know his birth. And I tried to verify that with one of my cousins last night. We weren't sure whether he was 92, 94, or 96.
Okay.
Because of all the documents. And the church, I think, that he belonged to on Ackle Island had burned, and they had lost a lot of their documentation. And also the Gallagher land in Ireland belonged to the Gallaghers. Because I guess at that time there was a rule, if you were born on that land that you were working and you lived for 100 years, that land was turned over to you. And back then, I think it was around the 1700s, there was a man by they called Black Dan Gallagher. And he was born there, and he lived to be 104.
Oh.
So the land did belong to the Gallaghers. And there's a word called boycott. And there was a lord there in Ackle Island that was very cruel to the people in his manor. And he was Lord Boycott, and the Gallagher family refused to work for him. So the word boycott became known.
You know, I've actually heard that origin story
mm-hmm.
before. Interesting that yes, a connection.
Yeah.
And so the Gallaghers are your mother's.
No, that's my dad.
Oh,
that's
your dad.
That's my dad.
Okay.
Yeah. And now on my mother's side, of course, my dad, uncle, all, and my mother both were born in Anaconda, Montana.
Okay.
Then on my mother's side, from what I can understand, and I'm not too sure of the dates. My grandmother's brothers, I think it was John, Michael, and a Barney, they migrated to the United States and ended up in Anaconda and had a boarding house, and it's the one, I think, on Commercial Street. It was very close there. And then herself came over, our grandmother, to work in that boarding house.
Okay.
And that's where she met our grandfather, Tom McGuire, who also was from the same area where she was raised.
Okay.
And she came, and that's where they met. And with the records that I've been finding, there's been a lot of connections between the Rose, and when I find baptismal records, you know, she was the godmother for a lot of the Rose people. Pat Peterson's father, my grandmother, was his godmother.
Okay.
And then my grandfather, Thomas McGuire, and he just worked on the hill. I don't think there was anything special trade with him, and they lived in what they called the houses across, where they took care of when the men took the railroad and stuff, and they'd take their tools and they'd leave them at these houses, and the people would live in these houses. They were across the tracks. I don't know what they were called, but if you took care of the tools, you had free rent.
Okay.
So they lived in those homes there. But then his father died, and I can't remember the year. My mom was born in 1905. And I think his father died in either 1904. And so Granny picked up all the family and went back to Ireland. And we've heard many variations of the story. First it was because Granny McGuire, my grandfather's mother, was ill and someone had to help her. But I think it was to go take care of the land. Because when I went to Ireland, I found out that old granny in Ireland walked from Carrickmacross to Corduff once a week to take care of a widower that her daughter was married to. And she'd walk once a week to Corduff, so she was not a sick lady.
Oh.
So then we've also heard the story that he did a split. So, but I can't imagine Granny going to the husband's mother. So, but she was back there, and my mother and all of them lived. My mother was at the age of 3, and they didn't come back home until, I don't know whether it was 1919 or 1920. And I want to say 1920. 20. They applied for passage in 1916. Because of World War I, they couldn't.
Okay, okay.
And when I was in Ireland this past summer with my brother, on the Maguire side, I've only heard about Carrickmacross, because that's where they lived, down on the Lurgan Road. And she went to the school, the Convent of St. Louis, and they had to go to school, once, because the English got money or something for every child that went to school. So they had to go to school. And she started school when she was 3 years old, going to that convent. And all the family went there. And but originally they were from Corduchy, or I think, I don't know how to say that, Corduchy, mm-hmm. and Corduff. And the original family home, and I have a picture of that, was a brick home. And then the brother of Maguire's had quite a bit of land up in that area. And they built a very nice home, this Catherine Rowe and the old Barney Maguire, my grandfather's parents. But now they used the word black and tan every time we were over there, even the Gallaghers and the Maguire ancestors that are left there. But now I'm hearing the black and tan didn't come out until 1920, so I don't know who they're talking about. But they talked about the black and tan, went to the Maguires, and they said they had to give their milk to the Protestant people, and they refused to do it. They dumped it on the road before they would give it to them. So they were thrown out of their house, and their home was given to a Protestant family. But they came over here basically, she came because to follow the brothers.
Okay.
Thomas came because of work.
Okay.
And then they lived here. And even when she was in Ireland, he went and visited her for 6 months in Ireland, and
okay.
then came back. He died here in 1917 while she was still in Ireland.
In Ireland.
Yeah. And I can find his death and everything, but I can't find whenever he was buried.
Oh.
I think they kept him on ice until she came home. Because I can't find any record.
Hard to say.
Except for his death certificate was signed 1920.
Okay.
3 years after he died.
And you mentioned that the Gallaghers, when the Gallagher gentleman immigrated, it was Ireland, Chicago, Montana.
Ireland, Scotland.
Oh, Ireland, Scotland, Chicago, Montana. And on the Maguire side, did they come directly out to Montana, or?
From what, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But my brother, and they bounced between Anaconda and Brooklyn. Now my grandfather Thomas had a brother by the name of Peter. And there's a lot of Peter's children that were born in Anaconda, and a lot of them were born in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn,
so they
New
bounced,
York.
Bounced back and forth. And when my mom and them were living in Ireland, the two brothers that she had were gun runners there. And Barney was put out of Ireland maybe 2 years before or 3 years before they left.
Okay.
And that was right before that Easter uprising.
Okay.
And they were told that if they were caught again, whether they were American citizens or not, they would be put to death or they'd automatically disappear.
Oh, okay.
So this is why Granny came back, because of the fact that the oldest boy was here, and Granny followed that oldest boy. And they
okay.
came back here to Anaconda to live, and then eventually she and the boys moved to New York.
Okay. And we kind of, in advance of the beginning of the interview, kind of talked about this. Are there any particular naming patterns within either the Gallagher or the Maguire families? So-and-so might have been named after someone.
Farrell Gallagher is a big, big family name. And that's how when we went to Ireland, we knew we were in the right area, because we went to the cemetery. And when we found the Farrell Gallagher plots, we knew we were on the right side.
Okay.
Because the first cemetery we went, we couldn't find any Farrells. And the grave diggers told us we were on the wrong side of the road. One is River and one is Keel. And I mean, it's just across the street, you know, and that's how it was. And he told us how to go and find out all our family. But Farrell is a very big family name. And my brother Red, I think, is maybe the sixth generation or seventh generation of the name Farrell.
So his full name is?
Farrell Michael Gallagher.
Oh.
Yeah.
That.
Red from the red hair.
I see. which kind of, there's another general area that's always of interest. You know, in addition to, say, traditional names, you know, either, you know, for the girls or for the boys, any other names or nicknames that are pretty traditional?
Kathleen is very traditional. And I have found, going back without even realizing, Elizabeth was a very big name on the McGuire side, and she has a daughter that has named a child Elizabeth, Teresa. I have Teresa, and they were spelled the same way, T-E-R-E-S-A, not the T-H, which surprised me very much. And we found out, yes, my Aunt Rosie Byrne was named after my grandmother's mother. Her name was Rose. And it sounded, looked like the first boy was named after the father's father, and the first girl child was named after the mother's mother. That's how it went. And there were Margarets and Maud. And there's another story, Maud. Okay, my grandfather comes to Anaconda. He has the first child is Margaret. His mother's name was Maud, though. And Margaret McInerney, I think's mother name was Margaret. And I think that's why the first child was named Margaret. Okay. The second child, which was a girl, was named Maud, after my grandfather's mother. Took her up to St. Peter's, and I believe it was a Pyrenean at that time.
Father Pyrenean.
Would not baptize her, because Maud was not a saint's name. So my grandfather said, if it's good enough for my mother, it's good enough for my child. So he took the child up to St. Paul's and had her baptized. The priest said, I'll baptize her. Baptismal certificate says Maria. He just never said to Ma what he was baptizing her. But she is Maud. And that was his mother's name. So that's how that comes. And the Edward was his father's name. And the one boy that lived from that first marriage, his name was Edward. So.
Interesting. Other than Red, any interesting nicknames?
Me, Koch, that's the only one. And then everybody's upset now because I have changed it to the Irish spelling, because I met a lady the other day and she says, are you Koch or Kate? I said, I'm Koch. Not according to the paper. I says, that's the Irish spelling.
And
I didn't go into the thought, okay, because...
Yes, we've talked about the fact that, yeah, we both share what I always assumed was a nickname, when in actuality it was my name in Irish.
Irish, so, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe moving on from, you know, the stories about from where, you know, your ancestors came out to Montana, why don't we move on to maybe something you'll be more familiar or as familiar with, your childhood. Can you tell me anything that you think is significant about your childhood in Anaconda?
Well, that we're very lucky to have grown up in Anaconda. And I think the Irish were, and I think this is with all old country people. Your home, your religion, were very, very strong presence in your house. And the one thing that I can remember, and I don't know whether Maureen remembers it, but I talked it over with my brother because I thought maybe I was going to make up something. We never wore green. Green was for grief. And my mother, being from County Monaghan and Carrick Macross, was very north. And she talked about dancing with the soldiers at the crossroads. But you didn't declare your Catholicism with them. So I think that carried over, and we were never allowed to wear green. And on St. Patrick's Day, we wore a medal of St. Patrick and a sprig of the shamrock. My first piece of green came when I was a junior in high school, and we were going to go to a Red Lodge. We were going to a tournament, a basketball tournament, and of course it was going to be over St. Patrick's Day. All the other kids wore green. Why couldn't I wear green? And I'd get the story, green was for grief. So I had went to Schwartz's and I had found a green skirt when Mary Margaret said, no, we can't have it, can't afford it. That was the end of it. But the day I went to the tournament, when I went home to pack, there was the skirt. It was my first piece of green that I ever wore. The Gallagher family sang a lot. And any time you went down in the house, you had to sit down. Pod sit in his chair, drink his beer, and we had to go to the piano, play a song, and we'd sing. Maureen remembers great Christmases down there, which my dad died when I was 4, and I don't remember those. Mm-hmm. But they would always meet down there and have a great Christmas party on Christmas Eve. And then, you know, Santa Claus would come and stuff like that. I remember the food on Christmas Eve. Oh, that red fish. I don't know what it was, but it was very fishy tasting. And it had a red sauce, and we'd have peas. And a boiled potato. That was a traditional meal. And another thing that I found very traditional, when I was thinking about childhood, as I got older, my mother would always have the ladies down before St. Patrick's Day, and she'd decorate always a tablecloth on the table. And we'd have boiled ham. My mother never heard of corned beef. It was always a boiled ham, a cabbage, and the potatoes for our St. Patrick's Day dinner. And then we'd go up to the old hall for the dance. Basically, that was, you know, it.
Okay. As a child, did you and your siblings or your neighbors, do for entertain? You know, how did you, you know, did you have any games or what did you do to entertain
yourselves? We'd go out on the street. We'd play football. We'd play tag. We'd play throwing the ball over the house. You know, I can't even remember the name of it right now. Heeny, neeny, high over or something like that. We'd throw the ball over the house and everybody'd have to catch it. You know, sledding on the street, ice skating up at the commons. And I think you sort of stayed in your block, all those kids, and we played right out in the street. And marbles, marbles was a great game, you know, with all the kids, tag. Visiting with one another at different houses. Lent, of course, on Good Friday, we couldn't talk for 3 hours, you know, we had to keep the silence. So we'd go to somebody's house and read funny books for 3 hours to maintain the silence. I think, you know, basically that was our, I think that everybody's childhood in Anaconda was like that. You had your own neighborhood and your own games, and it was right out in the street.
Could you just describe maybe your neighborhood and the types of houses and the families? I mean, were the, you know, what was kind of the makeup of your, say, your immediate neighborhood?
All right, on the left of me here, across the alley here, was the Driver family. An Afro-American family, and then ourselves, and then we had the Podomniks, the Croatian family. Across the street was a Croatian family, and on the other side was a lady by the name of Mrs. Walsh, an Irish lady, and we called her Pretty Eyes, because she had blue eyes, and she was known as Pretty Eyes Walsh. And she lived down there. And then further down my street lived Percy, who ran the Harlem Club. So on that side of me was very much Afro-American. And then on the corner was a Wiest family, and they were an Irish family. And then as there was a lot of Croatians, a lot of Irish in that whole neighborhood, and there was different houses across the street, like what single houses, you know, and different families were living in there. And there was quite a mixture of family. And behind us, the people that made that Saunders, Mrs. Saunders lived behind us, in up the alley like, and it was a very ethnic neighborhood, and we all played together. No one really cared what you were or who you were. You just played together and accepted everyone and enjoyed everyone.
And from what you're saying, I'm assuming that there were a lot of children in the neighborhood.
Oh yes, it was full of neighborhoods, and it was also a neighborhood that you didn't screw up in, because if the neighbor saw you screwing up, he took care of it, or she took care of it, and you didn't go home and tell your mother, because you would have got it again. I mean, they talk about now it takes a village to raise a child. We had that long before the book came out. We had the neighborhood, and God help us. And of course, see, my mother was a widow.
Yes.
And when we went into that house, we neither had phone or anything. We used to use Mr. Driver's phone, the Afro-American, and he supplied us with vegetables, all sorts of things. And if my mother was having trouble, she would call on Mr. Driver, but he'd say to her, Mrs. Gallagher, I can't go into your house. And he would not enter that unless my mother had someone walk in with him, and then he would repair the things.
Oh, uh-huh.
And his wife was Afro-American and Indian, and she was beautiful. Well, you know Woody Driver.
Yes, I do.
It was his mom and dad.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mother was Mrs. Driver's godmother.
Oh. That's very interesting.
And she converted to Catholicism, and their youngest child, who was Steve, and I was his godmother.
And, you know, you mentioned the fact that your mother was a widow.
Yes.
She was also, as I recall, a working mother.
Working mother, yes.
Could you tell, you know, maybe talk a little bit about that, you know, how many kids were in the family, and
okay,
when your mother went
yeah
to work?
Well, there was four of us, and when my dad died, my baby brother was 8 weeks old. I was 13. 13, Red 10, and Red was 10. Maureen was the oldest. Her real name is Mary Margaret, but she was known as Maureen. And then there was Pharaoh Michael, who was Red, Then there was myself, and then the baby brother, who was Thomas Dan, of course, after the grandfather. And there was four of us. And my mother was 34 at the age my dad died. My dad was 35. And he was the assistant vendor at the liquor store. And my mother got his job. So when we moved to, I don't know whether she went to work, I think, before we moved to 12 Birch. Because I got put into kindergarten at Bryan School. And they made me drink milk. And they made me take a nap. And guess what I did? I ran away from school. And I ran home to 711 East 5th Street. And I climbed a tree. And I sat up on that limb. And I watched everybody looking for me. And there was a little seat around that tree. And I knew eventually I'd have to come down because I was going to be killed, you know. I had to come down. So at that time, I was taken out of the Beaver Dam School and I was sent to the nuns. So I really went to first grade twice because the nuns took me in. And the reason they took me in is because my mother and dad chaperoned all their dances because my dad was the coach at the St. Peter's High School.
Okay.
And then I went to lunch at the nuns' place and I had good lunches.
Okay. And
then my mother went to work up as the assistant vendor.
Okay.
And because she was a woman in a man's job, the likes of Carmel DeRay, Skinny Francisco, a lot of the men, when she'd answer the phone, would not give her the order. Then as years went on, you know, and she was a little bit more accepted, and a few women would come in. The next governor that came in was a Republican. And that man went to her and said, because if she was a widow with four children, if she wouldn't mind working for a Republican governor, because it was an appointed job.
Okay.
And he was appointed by a Democratic governor.
Okay.
And this, I think it was Ford that came in, and he was the Republican. And he said to her, if you don't mind working for me, you may keep your job.
Okay. Oh, so, you know, maybe just to go back to this point for a minute. So when your father died, he was at the liquor store, but it was a political appointment. And then it kind of acted like a political representative in this, you know, and I've heard of this, that if a representative dies, in some cases, the widow
takes their job.
So it was kind of a similar situation.
Yes, my dad and mom were very, very active in the Democratic Party. In fact, I think he was the president of the Young Democrats of Montana.
Oh, okay.
And he was sort of, as I understand, was promised the postmaster's job. But I think it was the Finnegan that got the postmaster's job. And I think there was money involved and someone who had more pull. And then this is the job that he got.
Oh, okay. And then you said that after bailing out of, was it Bryan School,
mm-hmm.
That you went to the nuns and did first grade twice. Do you know the order of nuns? Was it
Dominican?
Dominicans,
yeah.
Okay.
And they always, you know, they had big, and they also had their own private cook at that time.
Ah.
So when I would go, the nun, and oh, she was a darling little nun. She was very kind, and the nuns were very, very kind to me. I would go to school, and then when I would go to, they would go to lunch. They'd all eat in the community hall where they ate, and I ate in the kitchen.
Okay.
So the next year when I should have been in the first grade, you know, and I was the PR lady. I greeted everybody as they were coming to school, because like Sis and Trish McMahon and all my friends that I knew, I was showing them the ropes, you know, because I thought I knew everything.
Because you had already been
I thought I knew everything, yes. Sort of like dancing, Kay.
I see. Were there neighborhood grocery stores?
Oh, yes. And my aunt had a neighborhood grocery.
Oh, okay.
Early grocery on East 5th Street was run by my aunt.
Okay.
And there were over on Park Street. What was the grocery store that Mom charged to before?
Washoe?
No. The one that Mom had the big bill with after Dad died.
I thought it was Washoe.
No, Washoe Market wasn't there. It was
Hodes or whatever.
No, Hodes was down further. You know where the fish and tackle shop is on East Park Street?
Yes.
There, where the old Anaconda service station is?
Yes.
There was a grocery store over there, and I can't remember the name of the man, but that's where my mother used to trade until my aunt opened her grocery store.
Okay.
And then, of course, she was there. And see, there again with that clannish bit of the Irish. My mother was the widow, okay? She had the family. And she moved very close to the older sister who was up on Commercial Street. My Aunt Kayla was down on Fifth Street, her sister. And then my father's family was just a couple houses down from her.
Mm-hmm.
But we were very fortunate to have groceries coming because my mother didn't have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
And my Aunt Rosie took care of that baby while my mother worked.
Okay.
And I often feel maybe that's why Mom moved up there closer to Rosie, because Rosie did take care of that baby while she worked.
Okay.
And then at that time, when we were in school, we started going to different families' homes for lunch. Did you go to the Gallagher's for lunch?
No, I went home and made my own.
You went home to make your own, okay. But I can remember going
old.
To my Aunt Kay Early's, and Red went to Gallagher's.
Okay.
And stuff like that, that we went for lunches. And as we got older, of course, when you could go home and do your own, we went home and did our own.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then once you got out of grade school, did you attend, at that time, was it St. Peter's or did you go to Central?
Well, it was... It really became Anaconda Central in 1946.
Oh, okay.
But they maintained the SP because it was the St. Peter's grade school, and of course
okay.
the high school was on top, so they maintained that name, St. Peter's High School. So
okay.
that just was kept. And because my brother, even when he graduated in 47, he had a SP sweater.
Okay.
But it seemed like after that it was all AC. And
oh, okay.
I was a year and a half in the brand new school, which is now the Fred Moodry Middle School.
Yes.
Yeah. I still refer to it as Central. And that's where we went. I went for a year and a half and graduated from there.
Okay.
And after my mother left the liquor store, she worked at the Anaconda Central School. And she was like an aide where she oversaw the study hall and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then from there she went to the Hill and worked in an office place, like helped cleaning beakers and stuff like that. And that's
okay.
where... before she remarried again. An interesting fact, when my mother remarried, she remarried my sister's father-in-law. So it can become very...
complicated.
Yeah.
Very complicated.
Very complicated. Another became my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
My father-in-law became my stepfather.
Oh my goodness, that's...
And
that's,
Maureen and Pete became half-brother and sister.
Oh dear.
Our stepbrother and sister, I should say, not half-brother, stepbrother.
Debbie did to us when she went to school.
So, I mean, but she never married until we were all raised.
Yeah.
And very much on our own.
Oh, okay.
So it was 1964 when my mother remarried.
When your mother remarried.
And she married Ralph Lear, and she had a very wonderful life for the next 13 years before Ralph died.
Okay.
He treated her very, very kindly. Yeah, she had a very good life.
That's good. That's very interesting. And then when you were in high school, did you participate in sports or activities?
We didn't have sports, I mean, other than our PE classes. And we had like a city volleyball. Yes, I did that. And I did like the city track because I loved to run. And I used to, it was a big thing for me. I'm very competitive. Does that sound familiar?
It does sound familiar.
Right?
I loved volleyball and I loved running and I hated losing.
I see.
Okay. And I was a cheerleader for 2 years in high school.
Okay.
But it was nothing like cheerleading today. I'd never be a cheerleader today because it's so acrobatic. I mean, my gosh, the stunts and stuff that they do.
Okay.
Yeah. And oh, we had a drum and bugle corps when we were in high school.
Oh.
Mrs. Little had a drum and bugle corps, and I was part of that before I became a cheerleader. So it was, we were very active. We did a lot of things in high school. Yeah. And we love great competition between the St. Peter's and St. Paul schools, you know, for volleyball as we grew up.
Oh.
Because remember the GAC girls would come and teach the kids in the grade school. They'd take us for the track and the volleyball, and that's how we got involved. And then Dick Little, who was the coach in high school, taught us girls basketball. Remember that was three on each side of the court, and only one or two could shoot the ball, you know. It was really different. Very different than what we watch girls basketball today.
That's
yeah.
Really interesting. As part of an Irish community, what would you like to share about, the LAOH organization or just those kinds of traditional things that... are associated with those social activities that we take part in. Yeah.
I had a hard time joining the Lady Hibernians, basically because my father my grandfather absolutely hated them. And I think, even though they were strong in Ireland, he always used to say they were nothing but a bunch of blatherskites. And I think, being that maybe he had the wrong kind of a priest in his village that told on everybody, and they were always sick, sitting next to the lord of the house there and stuff. So he did not have a fondness for the Hibernians.
Okay.
Okay, then my dad was a Hibernian and so was my mother. But when my mother went to work for the Republican governor, the Irish women turned their back on her and blackballed her out of it. So I had a very, very hard time joining the Hibernians because of all these activities. And because of Anne Lynch Francisco, now Anne Lynch was a Butte girl and her father was Judge Lynch, and he was very active in the Hibernians, in the Sons of Erin, is that what it is in Butte?
Yes.
Okay. She's the one that said, oh, come on, get involved. And I kept saying no, and finally talked me into joining it, and it's the best thing I ever did for the social bit and some of our traditional things, like our St. Bridget's Day, which is very wonderful. Just being connected with the Irish brought me interested in my Irish heritage to go back and start looking on things.
And from the sounds of things, you've done a considerable amount of work in that area.
I enjoy it. I wish I knew, and it's my own fault, because I've had the computer. My son made me get this laptop after Jack died. And I looked at it for many months, and he kept saying, now, go to school. And I thought, I can't go to school with it, because on Monday night, that interferes with Irish dancing. So I pick at it. But through that computer, I met some wonderful people, that Desi O'Neill, my second cousin from Ireland, that treated us like royalty when we went over there. We just had the best time with him. He was so gracious. I've learned more about the McGuire side of the family than I could ever. The McGuire and the Rowe side of the family. My great-grandmother was a Rowe that was connected with Pat Peterson, so we are distant relatives.
Very interesting.
And yes, that yeah. really, so I'm very thankful. And the closeness, I think you couldn't beat a better group of women. I think I was blessed by joining.
Okay. Do you want to share a little bit about maybe the origins and traditions of the Irish Washerwomen's group associated with the LAOH?
Yes. That was a fun thing. I think it was around the 90s, 1990. And I hadn't been in there very long, but we were having, every St. Patrick's Day we'd get in the parade, and the women would just join arms, and down we'd sing and carry on as we marched behind the men. I always put it in mind like the sheep following the herd, you know. And we were talking that day, and he said, why are we followers? Let's do something. So we met at the Club Moderne, and out of that came the Irish Washwoman Brigade. And then we had to decide on a costume. So we found an Irish doll, and we copied a lot of her types of clothing. And as we copied this type of clothing, it was amazing how significant each piece was. And like especially the scarf that we wear. The Irish women always wore shawls, and they had a very special shawl for going to church on Sunday that they covered themselves with. But their other shawl that they wore was their working shawl. They carried the potatoes, the pea, the baby. Everything was done with that shawl. And then we had the duster caps and the apron, and that was for all the domestic Irish girls that came, the Irish girls that came into the United States and worked as domestic people. And then we put the St. Bridget's cross on in honor of our patron saint, St. Bridget. And then we've added a yellow ribbon for all our members who had marched with us and have passed away. The washboards for our grannies who had the boarding houses, and they used a washboard to wash those clothes. So every piece has a significance to it. And now on our washboards, we have the American flag and the Irish flag for our country and for our heritage. Another thing, when my mother used to say, and I don't know whether Maureen remembers it, maybe she didn't say it to Maureen. Maureen says, and it could be my mother did a lot more with me because as a lot of things maybe had settled down after my dad had died. When we'd be going to school and they'd always ask us our nationality, she said, remember, you're Irish American. Make sure you tell them you're Irish American. So that's how we always put down our nationality.
Irish American.
Yeah. Oh. But that was a fun thing, and look at what it has developed into. We're what, 21 years strong? And we've been written up by so many things. And now the Backroads of Montana want to do an article on us. So I think for something that started out as fun, and we didn't want it to be something that was degrading to our group. We wanted it to be something that was special. And this is how, what it turned out. And you remember our first skirts came down to our ankles, and we looked like a disgruntled order of nuns. That we were put out of the order, maybe. But now we've shortened the skirts and they look a little better. We still have fun. It's great music. It's a very easy routine. It's just a fun thing to be doing something special for our St. Patrick's Day, which I think is a very special day because we started with Mass. The breakfast, to me, is wonderful because people tell stories or sing a song. And we've lost so many of our older people that told beautiful stories, sang beautiful songs. They might have talked a little too long at times, but we miss those people now. And I think with the heritage that we're trying to carry on with our Irish Watchman Brigade, it has enhanced our parade and what our St. Patrick's Day means to us. It's no, sure we go out and drink and have fun. We are a fun-loving people, but we are not that way beforehand, and our parade, as you know, is very nice compared to other people's parades, and we won't name their areas.
Very good. The other thing that I know you're very involved with, and I'm sure it's because of your heritage and just a general interest in this, as well as being part of the LAOH, and that is the Irish dance. If you,
yes.
If, yeah, if you want to.
You know, that started with my mother teaching me a jig in the kitchen. And that's how that involved. And one year when we were in high school, and we were friends to a family that was called Roach, and Ed Roach was very, very Irish, and his daughter and I were in the same grade. And so for one year for our St. Patrick's Day assembly at the school, we did, Ed and my mom taught us this Irish jig, and we did this at this assembly. And that was many years ago, and then as years went on and we had started to get involved with the Carahers and Helena, all that came back. And she was looking for a step to finish her jig, and I have found out since that in Helena it's called the Koch step.
Oh.
Because she didn't know how to finish it, and I said, well, this is what my mother did, and that's what she put in how to, when we do the Irish Washwoman.
Yes,
that's how my mother ended it up, and that's what they call in Helena the Koch step.
Oh.
So, and that's how it got involved. And then Sis Taher came and said, you know, Sandy has a daycare. Would you go teach the little girls your jig? And I said, sure. So I went up and taught them. And that was the start of the little Aislinns and the bigger Aislinns. And it just evolved from that. And I do like it. And I have learned much from tapes and much from different classes that we have gone to that the Carahers mm-hmm. have put on. But my most special St. Patrick's celebration, and it wasn't on St. Patrick's Day, was when my granddaughter, who danced with me all the time, my own kids never danced with me, but my granddaughter loved to do it. And so her and I went down to the Ramsey School, I think she was in the second grade, and her and I did the jig together for every class.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yes, excuse me, I think there's somebody at my door.
Okay, I'll. And a couple of times you've mentioned, both in the context of the Lady Hibernians and the Washerwomen and the maybe even the dancing, kind of the connection between these fun times and the tavern that you and your husband Jack used to manage.
Oh.
If you could talk about that a little bit.
Okay, my Jack, my bohunk, and part English. His mother was born in Cornwall. He was very fond of the Lady Hibernians, and because they always went down to the bar after their parties or St. Patrick's Day or whatever, And he always, when we marched at in Deer Lodge, he was our bartender. He made the Bloody Marys, and I can't even think of the other drink.
I think it was screwdrivers.
The screwdrivers, that's what it was. And we always had those. We called them our vitamins before we marched down in Deer Lodge, and he was our special bartender for that. He loved it to have it in the back. And he even got stronger with them when we used to have our meetings in the back room. Remember when we lost our hall?
Yes.
And then we were at the Croatian Hall for a while, and then we ended up in the back of the bar in the back room there. Never charged us to have anything back there, and we had a lot of fun parties there. And we were always involved. He just enjoyed it, and that was my day. He always saw to it that I could go and do my thing. He loved driving the truck with the music.
Okay.
And he just liked having everybody come down there to the bar and being part of it himself. It was a big connection with us. And it wasn't until after I joined in, because he knew how standoffish I was at first about it. But then, even Irish can mellow at time, I guess. So we did mellow, and it was very wonderful to go back. And I look at it now, because with all the ladies that I have met and been part of, and those that have gone down to the bar, Margaret Kelly was the love of his life. She just won him over like crazy. And she'd always go down there. The Dillon girls were all part of that group.
My mom knew the Dillon girls.
Yes, and they were very much part of our social part of the Club Madurian. And we looked forward to those people coming.
Right.
And it seemed like mostly on Friday afternoons they would come in and be all part of our bar and our business. They were our very good business for us.
I think maybe someone listening to this interview who isn't familiar with the Club Madurn might. I mean, to me, I've always thought that it was a place that in the past was, it had certain standards so that perhaps women were more comfortable going to that particular tavern.
Yes.
Is that your
view yes,
as well?
Absolutely. It was very high standards. It was built by his uncle in 1937. And then Jack and I took it over in 1971. There was that bit, the men wore the white shirts, the vest, the tie, and everything. You respected a woman. And when a woman was in the bar, there was no swearing. No bad language. You used the foul words. The door was there, and out you went. And I can remember Jack with a classmate of his. She used the famous four-letter word, and he warned her once. And he says, don't say it again. She says, Jack, you'd never put me out. We're too good of friends. He says, I'm telling you right now, there's women in here, other women in here that do not appreciate it, and neither do I. Do not use that word again. She used it again. He dumped her drink and escorted her out of the bar. There was none of it. Another thing he did not allow was, you know how you bump everybody and jest and stuff like that? He said the first thing that happens, you're doing it first in fun, you have 2-3 drinks, you're not happy about it. And then a fight starts out.
Mm-hmm.
And he would not allow that. Oh yes, there was very high standards. And at different occasions, there was always roses given out for women.
Oh.
At different parties. And then at Christmas time, there was always a big party for them. And before we took it over and after Skinny had built it, there was a big party always in July, closest to Skinny's birthday, which was July 13th.
Okay.
And he did 7 pigs and 6 lambs that they would barbecue. And all the old ladies were escorted. They were given cars, and there was a bunch of Cadillacs, and they would take these ladies out to this picnic so that they would get there, and they were given a rose and treated very nicely.
Oh.
Oh yes, women were treated very nicely at that bar. And the back room for a long time, the ladies, like if you had something going on in the afternoon, the ladies would come in the afternoon and sit in the back part and never bothered by anyone. I bartended in there for over 20 years, and the only time I ever heard a foul word was came out of a woman's mouth that I had to get rid of.
I see. So
the men respected you. They knew that you do it.
That my impression is correct, that it was
yes.
A place that had very high standards.
And you did not fool around with it, yeah. I can remember when the bartenders came to work for Jack And he came in the door, and he had jeans on. Jack says, what have you got on? And he says, well, I got my white shirt, I got my tie. And he says, take a look at your pants. He says, Jack, these jeans cost more than my dress pants. He says, I don't care what they cost. You're not wearing jeans. He had to go home and change. We had another bartender, and the rule was you never put the bar keys on your key ring that you use for the car.
Mm-hmm.
You had to keep that separate. And this happened to be a nephew. And he put it was on his keychain, and he, of course, when he came into work at 6 o'clock, there was a bartender there. He didn't have to open the door, so he came in. His car was stolen while he was in there bartending from there. And when he went out to get it, to get locked up, there was no keys. We get a call at 2 a.m, Jack, I can't lock up, I don't have keys. Well, where are your keys? Well, I left them in the car. Well, where's your car? It was stolen. Oh, really? He said, what am I going to do? And Jack says, I guess stay there. He says, I'll see you in the morning. Hung up the phone. And that was
that. Was that.
He went the next morning and bailed him out. And then he had to pay for all the changing of the locks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, there were different standards, yes. I'm not saying we didn't have problems. Yes, I don't care where you go in life, you had problems. But if he was there, and they knew it, the guys were always on the lookout of making sure that Jack would not walk in on him, and they never knew when Jack would walk in. Jack would take different trips at different times during the week to the bar uptown to make sure that the lights weren't on at 6 o'clock. There was hell to be paid. He said, my lights aren't on, that means I'm not in business. Yes, there were different standards.
Yeah. Because Jack's background and heritage was not Irish, you said that you won him over, and I'm assuming that Jack enjoyed these celebrations and the bar's
and
involvement,
you know what?
With the Hibernians and St. Patrick's Day as much as anyone.
And he also enjoyed, we went to Ireland in 1999.
Ah.
Guess who the Gallagher family liked the most? Jack. He just fell right in with them. They would look at him and they say, don't you think he looks more Irish than that other part? Yeah. Yeah, he fell in love with the granny over there, and this granny now is going to be 100 next year.
Oh, my.
And he and her just fell in love with one another, and she had the most beautiful blue eyes. And after that trip, her birthday is December the 7th. I have to send money. We first of all start sending chocolate, because Jack said to her, can I get you something nice? She says, you know, I love the sweets. So we had to go someplace and buy some sweets and bring them the chocolate. After we came home for a couple years, I'd send her some chocolates. Well, now I send Bridgie money to buy her chocolates over there, because it makes more sense.
It
you
does.
Know? Yeah, but she's going to be 100, and Bridgie and them would like for me to go back to help celebrate her 100th birthday. Because then the president of Ireland is going to give her a grand stipend, you know. Now, what that grand stipend is, I have no idea.
Ah.
But she'll get a stipend from the president of Ireland when she turns 100.
Okay. What, I know that when we did the pre-interview, you talked about a few things that that you have as far as keepsakes and mementos.
Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned one before we started the interview. Why do you think your family kept the things that they kept? Or
because things like that, anything that you did that felt good to you, you kept, I think. Now, this one was kept by this Desi O'Neill, that is a second cousin in Ireland. And it is a certificate from Governor Rickards to Patrick Larkin. And Patrick Larkin was married to Catherine McGuire, who was a sister to my grandfather. And this was because if he was like in an Irish part of the service, and was for the Spanish-American War.
Oh.
So I have that certificate, if Pat would like to take a picture of that.
Okay.
I also have a picture of the first, it's just the foundation of the McGuire house, and then the next house that they were evicted from. And then from there they went to Carrickmacross. This is in Corduff.
Mm-hmm.
So they were in Corduck, and I think Cordukey. And I think those things were kept because they meant a lot to those people. Any kind of an award that showed that you were being honored and you were Irish. And at that time, they were having hard times in the United States, even being accepted. So I think anything that showed acceptance, they did.
Okay.
They honored that, like your medals or anything like that.
Okay. Let's see. I think we've hit the high points of everything that I had planned to cover. Is there anything else that, you know, as we've moved along, that, you know, occurs to you that you might want to share about?
Nothing except that I hope Our Lady of Higher Burnings always stay very strong. Yeah, and our washerwomen.
Okay. So just to wrap up, just as far as growing up as part of a Irish and then an extended family of you know, ethnic groups in mm-hmm. Anaconda, what do you think has changed the most about Anaconda, say from the time you were growing up to what Anaconda is now?
A loss of a lot of our past practices with our ethnic groups.
Okay.
Growing up, I had a lot of good Irish friends, and I had a lot of good Croatian friends. They were called Austrians at that time because of the way they came out of the country. But I can remember growing up with, like, the Herbaliches and the Kriskoviches, all the Croatian people, and their Mesopus, which they just celebrated Sunday, which means without meat, and which my husband was very active in. My kids are also Croatian, and they belong to that. But we would go down there, and they used to have the best celebration. They'd have the dummy, and all the troubles of the world would be put on that dummy, and then that dummy would be burned, and they'd dance, and they'd sing. This was all in their native tongue.
Uh-huh.
And it was wonderful. And now it is just like a meal, and they do have a small skit, but not the big doings. And I think it is sad to see the loss of that.
Okay.
With our Irish group, I think we're very lucky to be keeping a lot of our old traditions. And I hope that never fails. And it's my saddest part is that we don't have little ones dancing. I know in Butte they have the wonderful group, but that is so structured. I think dancing for fun is a little bit easier for children.
Uh-huh.
The cost of that, I think, is outrageous.
Right.
And I think it's the wigs and stuff. It is wonderful if you want to go into competition. But I think they should also have the dancing for fun.
Okay.
And I think that has to be kept.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And do you know there was Irish lessons taught many years ago? When I went back in the history, for years, the ladies taught one another the Irish dancing in the old hall.
So you're carrying on that tradition.
Without realizing it. But I have help from the likes of yourself there.
And then maybe if you can address this if you feel that you would, to kind of wrap up. They talk, you know, there's some suggestions that maybe, you know, two areas. What would you consider to be the moments of the greatest joy and sorrow in your life, or if you were to write the history, or if you were to write the history of the Irish in Montana, what would you include for future generations? And I know, so you ponder those two questions
You know, it's. I wouldn't want the history of the Irish in Montana changed at all, you know. It's everybody's going to have a different take on that, because just like the stories you got from your grandparents, you didn't know what was truth or what was a nice story, you know. Because as far as we know, our grandfather swam into the United States. This is what he told. He was a great swimmer. He had a great strong body, you know. Is it true? Was he illegally in the United States? We have no idea.
Right. Okay.
I wouldn't want any of those stories changed, and I would like all the traditions to be continued. I would like to see more casual dancing, and yes, I would like to see classes for little children being brought into all the areas, not just certain special areas. I would like to see it branched off so that little ones could be learning some steps. I would like to see our women take a stronger stance in that.
Okay.
That I would like to see. Greatest joy, living in Anaconda. Being associated with Anaconda, I guess, would be your greatest joy, don't you think? We grew up great. Yeah. Didn't we? We had great times.
We do.
There was nothing that you wanted for in friendship, people, good times.
Okay.
We did a lot of good things.
Okay.
You know, and we did have, we had fun without realizing we were having fun.
You find people, they're always your friend. I mean, I've been away from Anaconda for 60-some years, but I still come
They're always your
and
friend.
I'm
yeah.
really
okay.
welcome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, I think that's the perfect note
yeah.
to conclude on.
I think it is too.
Okay.
Oh,
thank
God,
you.
Thank you. Do you want to?